Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Kahani Cooperman, who is a Bethesda native and now director of the Oscar-nominated documentary short, Joe's Violin. Kahani, thanks so much. It's an honor.
I am thrilled to be talking to you.
I want to go into the doc and the story itself in a minute, but first of all, congrats on the Oscar nomination. Where were you when you heard about that?
Thank you. I was in my living room where I now live in New Jersey, and my producer, Rafaela Nehausen, who lives in the same town, she came over with her young son, and I had my daughter and my husband in the room with us while we watched the announcement on television. My son had already gone off to school, but we sat on the edge of the couch in the living room and heard the announcement, and of course, when we heard the name of our film mentioned, we just, you know, screamed and teared up, and every cliched reaction that you think you won't do, you do.
Well, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's when the time comes, you're jumping off the couch.
Yeah, it was a very, very exciting moment and really wonderful to share with, you know, some family members and unbelievably exciting.
That's so cool. And then there's a viral video going around where the subject, Brianna Perez, caught Denzel's attention at the Oscar luncheon. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, I actually shot that video. It was an incredible moment that I will probably never forget my whole life. So we came out to Los Angeles for the nominees luncheon, which is a very special event where all the nominees are in a room together. And I brought Brianna Perez, who is the now 14-year-old, but was 12 years old at the time when we filmed. She's one of our main subjects, and I brought her as my guest. And she was very excited to have the opportunity to meet many celebrities. And Denzel Washington is one of her idols. And actually, during the lunch, she met so many people who were so lovely to her, but she didn't get to meet him. And afterwards, we had a scheduled press interview that we were waiting for in a certain area by the hotel pool. And who should walk by but Denzel Washington? And we chickened out of approaching him, and he got whisked away into an interview and kind of thought, oh, darn, missed the opportunity for Brianna to meet him. But when he came back out, he noticed her, I think, and she happened to have her violin in a case strapped to her back, sort of prepared in case any interviewers asked her to play anything. So he noticed that, and he asked her if she wanted a photo or something, and she said with a huge smile, yes. And he said, okay, on one condition, if you play something for me. So right then and there, you know, by this pool and in front of strangers and Denzel Washington, her idol, Brianna pulled Joe's violin, the very violin that was donated to her, out of the case and played Pachelbel's Canon in D for him. And it was just the most stunning moment. It was, you know, close to a 3-minute performance, and Denzel Washington, he just truly listened and took in the emotion that she played with, and it was just really a stunning moment. Despite the fact that it was on such a busy day, he took that time for her. And then when the song was over, and by the way, like, everyone sort of ended up stopping for this. People were, you know, filming it on their phones, and everyone was quiet and applauded at the end. And Denzel Washington came up to her as she ended, and they had a really warm embrace, and it was just an amazing, touching moment for this 14-year-old girl from the South Bronx.
You must have been just tearing up behind your cell phone.
Oh, completely. Like, I'm surprised you can't hear me sniffling in the background.
No, but that says, like you kind of mentioned, it says a lot about Denzel and his, you know, his character, that he would take that time and, you know, devote that to her on such a busy day. That's just...
It was very special, and I know he doesn't know the significance of the violin. I'm sure he hasn't seen our film yet.
Right.
Maybe he will get to now. But so this was all about Brianna. He saw this young girl, and he took a moment out for her, many moments, 3 minutes you know, for her to play this song for him. And it turned out they both grew up in the Bronx, so they actually had a moment to find sort of this commonality, and it was really lovely.
That's so great. All right, well, let's dive into the doc itself. So it's amazing. I urge everyone to go see it. Come, you can knock it out in 20 couple minutes, so everyone needs to see this. All right. So.
Yeah, it's available for free online. Anyone can see it if you go to thenewyorker.com, and it's available. You don't need to pay. It's right there for you to see.
Yeah, and bring your Kleenex. all right, so tell our listeners what it's about. Explain who Joseph Feingold is, and also, I mean, we mentioned Brianna a little bit, but just give them the basic premise real quick.
Sure. So Joe's Violin is about two strangers from completely different walks of life, born 80 years apart, who are connected by a single violin. Joseph Feingold is... at the time, he was a 91-year-old Holocaust survivor living on the Upper West Side of New York, and a local radio station was having an instrument drive. He had a violin that he wasn't using anymore, and he donated it. He was glad to hear that all the instruments donated were going to be going to New York City school kids. So, I didn't know if the violin had a significant history when I started doing this, but I, you know, in talking to Joseph, soon found out that it had an incredibly poignant story attached to it, and I was very curious if whichever young student was going to get it would ever know what that story is. So once I learned the story from Joseph and felt like he was, you know, a really wonderful storyteller, I thought I'd follow and see what happened, and, you know, it couldn't have gone to a more impressive school, and they chose a really unusual and amazing young 12-year-old girl to receive the violin. And it's about how Brianna Perez, who's, her parents are Dominican, and she lives in the South Bronx, and this Polish-American Holocaust survivor become connected and have a bond now forever through this musical instrument and their love of music and the power of it.
It's so great. How did you actually first hear about it, though?
Well, you'll appreciate this because I was driving and listening to my car radio.
Power of radio, baby.
That's right. I was listening to my car radio on my way to work, and I heard a promo for the radio station's instrument drive. You know, something to the likes of, you know, donate your instruments. All instruments are going to New York City school kids. Mm-hmm. And they named a few examples of a couple instruments that they already received, and one of them was a violin. I knew nothing more about that, but kind of as I got to each stoplight, I found myself more curious and more curious about the path of this violin. And by the time I pulled into the parking lot, the idea of two strangers being connected by the violin was incredibly moving to me, so I pursued it.
It's so amazing. And talk about, you know, just the, I know the radio station for the instrument drive partnered with a group called Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, and you included in the doc how they were estimating to get, you know, maybe only 1,000, but ultimately got 3,000 and 500 on the first day. So talk about how that sort of speaks to the generosity, you know, the generous American spirit.
Absolutely. I think that, this film is about many things, and one of them is about how a small act can have a truly great impact. You're correct. WQXR, this is their first instrument drive. They hoped for 1,000. They received 3,000 instruments. And, you know, Joe's violin is one of those, but you have to imagine that every single one of these instruments has a story. And they're all, these instruments are being connected with kids who I'm sure also have amazing stories. So it's happening over and over again. And WQXR partnered with the Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation, which is an amazing organization based in the Los Angeles area. That's year-round mission is to place instruments in schools around the country. schools around the country. And so it was the Mr. Holland's Opus Foundation that decided that the Bronx Global Learning Institute for Girls would be a fantastic home for this very, very special violin, and it was the school that chose this extraordinary young girl as the first recipient of it.
And I think in the doc, don't you say that is the poorest congressional district in the nation?
Yeah,
wow.
It's the South Bronx, and it is.
Yeah. So, and you kind of alluded to it earlier about, you know, how you said her family was Dominican, you said.
Yeah.
Just talk about how that itself is sort of a timely topic that, you know, that we're here with the Bronx Global Learning Institute for Girls that has immigrant families from South America, Caribbean, Africa. You know, talk about why that itself is a timely theme in the dot.
Well, you're 100% right. There's, you know, there's a lot of themes, but after the election, you know, one of the themes in the film really sort of came to the forefront just for me personally, which is that Brianna's family's from the Dominican Republic, and she goes to a school where the student body is comprised almost 100% of new immigrant the children of new immigrant families. And so that's, you know, very significant in and of itself. But also Joseph came here as a refugee. He came here in 1947 from a displaced persons camp after surviving you know, many years in a Siberian labor camp while much of his family was killed in concentration camps. And so, you know, both he and Brianna are very much, you know, classic immigrant stories and these, you know, beautiful people that make up the fabric of, I think, what makes our country what it is. And so there's a moment in the film that, you know, towards the end when Brianna and Joseph say goodbye and Joseph gets into a car to outside of the school to go home. And, you know, frankly, the car is just like an Uber that we ordered for him. And even though I know Uber is politically charged
right.
Now, but if, putting, you know, that of course aside, the Uber drives away with Joseph in it, this, you know, this immigrant and refugee, he's leaving the school where this young girl is, and the car that we just happened to get has an American flag on it.
Wow.
And it's just waving in the wind, the small flag as it drives away. And so that has taken on since the election an incredible resonance for me.
But that's sort of the key, you know, as a documentary filmmaker like yourself, that's the key of, you know, you can't plan those moments. You just got, you know, you have to find those happy accidents and realize, oh, let's get the flag, you know, so hats off for that. How do you go about,
yeah.
I mean, in all these amazing themes we're talking about, you know, none of it would work without those two, you know, amazing central figures. And
oh, yeah.
just talk about how sort of, you know, you decided to sort of balance the archival footage with the present day footage and, you know, how do you sort of strike that balance?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, my two main characters are, you know, Joe was 91 at the time. He's now almost 94. Brianna was 12, and now she's 14, going on 15. And they were born 80 years apart. So I've got one character who's lived for 91 years, and another, not character, but main subject, and
yeah.
another main subject who has lived for 12. And so you want to create an equal balance between these two characters so that, you know, not to spoiler alert, but when they come together at the end and they meet for the first time, it was really important for me for viewers to realize equally what was at stake for both people.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to balance out 12 years of life with, you know, 91 years of life. And you know, one that really informed the decisions I made about what aspects of their lives I was going to sort of explore and be able to tell. You know, I needed people to feel equally for both characters.
Well, we do. we get goosebumps.
And they happen to be extraordinary,
yeah.
even if you didn't know their history. I mean, the other thing that's incredible and was a gamble is, you know, I couldn't have predicted that she would invite him to the school and that he would accept, which I'm thrilled obviously happened. But then there was also, I didn't know if they would actually connect. But the connection in the moment of meeting is so tangible and palpable. And it's, you could feel it when we were filming it, and I think it comes across in the film. And, you know, it's a true bond. They are forever bonded, and they stay in touch to this day. They love each other, and it's incredible, and it's all they're you know, they're connected on so many levels, and really through their love of an instrument that has helped both of them in their different ways get through dark times and give them great comfort and joy in life.
Well, and I think what makes it work is she, despite being, you know, only on Earth for 12 years, she really gets it. She says, you know, there's so many secrets in this violin. I get to have history in my hands, I think she says. So it's,
yeah.
She understands everything you're showing in the black and white photos. She gets the significance of it. And just talk about, I mean, the part that gave me the most goosebumps was you show that his mother, who ultimately died in a concentration camp, you showed the lyrics that the mother sent to Joseph when they're separated in the camps. And then later you have Brianna play that same song, and it's just, man, I just teared up watching it. When you saw that
moment, I'm tearing up just hearing you describe it again.
No, but it's talk about, I guess, not just you as a filmmaker discovering that and saying, boom, that's the money bit, but more so just like the thematic importance of the fact that that violin holds such a connection between Joseph and his mother, and now almost, you know, now he's almost in a weird way a father figure to this new young girl. But talk about that song and that moment.
Sure. You know, Joseph, he grew up in a very, very musical family. They had music playing all the time in their home in Warsaw, and his mom was a singer, and he and his two brothers all learned how to play the violin, and they'd all perform together, you know, in their living room as a family. It was just an incredibly huge part of their lives. And when they were separated from the war, Joseph to a Siberian labor camp, you know, he was able to, at that time, and it was before his mother was unfortunately taken to a concentration camp, he was able to write letters once a month. So he wrote to his mother, and she wrote him back a particularly poignant letter that quoted the lyrics from Solveig's song, which was written by Edvard Grieg. And it was a passage from the song, and it's about someone who's missing someone and who will wait for them and who will be there when they return. And it's very, very touching. And the song itself is incredibly beautiful. And, you know, there's added poignancy to the fact that, you know, when Joseph received this letter, he did not know yet that, you know, he was not going to ever see his mother again. But when I told the school, you know, about Joseph's history, just in the very early phases of me trying to get the permission to film, and frankly, before, you know, Brianna was the recipient of the violin, I was telling them the story of this letter, and the amazing music teacher, Coco Tanaka-Suan, who's in the film, her eyes just kind of widened. She's like, that's the song that I want to teach, you know, the recipient, Brianna. So they came up with that idea, and so, yeah, again, spoiler alert, she plays the piece for Joseph, and it's very, very moving.
It's just like past and present history just melts away, and then the two of them are just there with that song, and it's like his mom's in the room. Man. speaking of Joseph and, you know, growing up in a musical family and all that, how about you? Let's hear about you. You grew up in Bethesda. We mentioned that at the top, and you graduated from Walt Whitman High.
I did. Vikings.
Yeah, go Vikings. So how did you, I got to say go Lancers. I went to Linganore and Frederick. So,
all right. But, that's okay. I won't hold it against you.
Yeah, exactly. But talk about, you know, growing up. How did you come from Bethesda and make your way all the way up to New York at The Daily Show?
Well, I, you know, when I went to college, in Chicago out of Whitman, and I started working in theater there. And I really enjoyed working in theater, and I was also always watching a ton of films, and I started applying everything I was learning to theater to films in a different way, and I ended up just sort of taking off with that and went to graduate school in New York City to a film school at Columbia. And ended up just falling in love with the documentary storytelling form and telling real people's stories. That's just, nothing moves me or interests me more than that. And so I started making documentaries and working on documentaries. I worked for the Maisels, who are veteran documentary filmmakers, for many years. And it was because of my documentary background that I got hired as a field producer on a new show called The Daily Show in 1996.
No one knew anything about this new show.
No one knew anything about it. The host was not Jon Stewart yet. It was a guy named Craig Kilborn. Mm-hmm. And I was hired as a field producer to essentially create these short 3 to 4 minute news-like pieces with correspondence. But it was because of my documentary background that I got hired. And, you know, little did I know that that 12 weeks would turn into more than 18 years of an amazing job where I ended up being co-executive producer for my final 8 years there. And it was, as you can imagine, utterly fantastic. But I never lost my passion for documentary storytelling. In fact, you know, I loved it and I was hungry to keep doing it. I was able to make one film during my time there. And then years later, really felt strongly that I needed to make another one. And so I started making Joe's Violin on the side while I worked at The Daily Show. I eventually left The Daily Show for another job a few months before Jon Stewart departed and continued with Joe's Violin there and finished it up. And it premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival and has just had a really beautiful almost a year now on the film festival circuit, with obviously the, you know, culminating acknowledgement being this, you know, very unexpected and thrilling Oscar nomination.
So exciting. So you're making Joe's Violin on the side. Jon Stewart's making Rosewater on the side. But do you think that's sort of the secret to the show? I mean, obviously it was absolutely hilarious and we miss Jon and you. But no, it's still funny. But in addition to being so funny, I mean, you have the two of you and God knows how many others who are these really socially conscious people that are always trying to tell these stories and, you know, and improve humanity, to, for the lack of a better phrase. So, you know, but do you think that's sort of the secret, is you guys are intellectually curious people there?
Here's the thing. I mean, it's obviously like a huge team. I don't, you know, it's a huge team led by Jon Stewart. I was one person in the mix there. But I do think that everyone really cares there. You know, it is a comedy show, and people lose sight of that along the way. But it really was a comedy show. But I do think that people felt really strongly about what we were commenting on, and so there was a lot of inherent passion throughout the entire staff and coming from the top. Jon Stewart cared deeply about you know, everything that we made hay of on the show, and I do think that's that rang true for people, and I think that was, you know, one of the reasons that the show was the success it was. And also, you know, as a, you know, I truly appreciate that it's Jon Stewart who really led that show. He was very supportive of myself and anyone who had side projects that they felt passionate about. He thought that was really important for you to be able to do. So as long as you did your job, like, you would always get the blessing to pursue your, you know, passions, which, you know, doesn't always happen. So I will be forever appreciative of that.
That's so awesome. Well, We got to talk to Jon when he came to D.C. to talk about Rosewater, so it's a thrill to get to talk to you about Joe's Violin.
I am honored to be on WTOP. It's great to talk to you.
Awesome. Well, best of luck at the Oscars. Hopefully, hopefully it'll be Oscar winner Connie Cooperman in a minute. But
we shall see. They say, it's an honor just to be nominated.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll be rooting hard for you out there. So thanks so much for joining us. It's a great little doc, and all the best. Thank you so much for sharing this story.
Absolutely. My pleasure.